If you plan to buy one item commemorating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, I highly recommend the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October. It's titled The Reformation. You'll want to display this richly illustrated book on your coffee table, in your church library, or anywhere you can easily flip through this informative and beautiful book. The Reformation is written by regular guest Dr. Cameron McKenzie. Learn more about The Reformation at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. It's been my experience both as a pastor of almost 30 years, but also having done this program for almost 20, that generally speaking, and I think this might be coming to an end, but generally speaking, theological liberals tend to be kind of coy. They embrace all the tenets of liberalism, but there's a lot of equivocation, a lot of yes and no answers. You don't get a lot of straight talk from them. They may not even like being thought of as liberal, so they kind of play it fast and loose. The language gets a little fuzzy around the edges. It's not an honest enterprise, liberalism, especially theological liberalism, usually. But then every once in a while, you do encounter an honest liberal. And there's a congregation that's recently in the news in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America that is trying honest liberalism as a way of church growth, a way of growing their congregation that was once large and now is smaller, and they'd like it to be bigger again. They're going to do it by just being upfront about how liberal they really are. Joining us to talk about media coverage of this attempt by a mainline liberal congregation to reverse its membership decline, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
An interesting story from RNS on a Lutheran congregation that's trying honest liberalism as a formula for growth. Tell us the story.
It really is a kind of interesting situation. Religion News Service did this report about a congregation in Cary, North Carolina. So in one sense, it's the Bible Belt. In another sense, it helps to know that just outside of Raleigh, that Christ the King Lutheran Church sits right on the edge of an astonishingly dense region in terms of higher education. I mean, where you have North Carolina State University, you have the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill, and you have Duke University. Then you have another kind of left-of-center mainline Protestant heritage school called Elon. You have all of these colleges and universities, and what normally happens with politics and culture when you're surrounded by colleges and universities? Want to take a guess at that?
Well, I mean, generally speaking, they just get mixed right up together now, don't they?
Well, they turn blue. When you look at a map of the Bible Belt or of the Sun Belt in presidential elections, the little spots of blue are almost always college towns. College towns are towns with intense government activity, like a state capital or something like that. So normally, if you're going to look for a thriving Unitarian Universalist congregation, you look for a state university campus, and you look nearby, and you'll have packs of honest liberals running around, doctrinal liberals. So I was fascinated that this story was about an ELCA Lutheran church that used to be big, and then it got small, and now they're trying to be very openly and aggressively liberal in a lot of different ways. It also says they're trying to really get more excited about evangelism, and evangelism is like handing out donuts in the parking lot next door at the public school parking lot and inviting people to church. Or another example was this: they apparently do the Ash Wednesday thing, where you stand outside with ashes, and a car pulls in the parking lot, and you ask them if they want ashes, and if they say yes, you do. You put ashes on their forehead, and invite them to church, which doesn't sound like a very rich liturgical tradition to me, but evangelism, in other words, means kind of friendliness. I call it heaven and hell neutral evangelism. I mean, there's really no issue of salvation here. Evangelism is a code word for church growth, of which evangelism is crucial to church growth in a lot of different settings, but there are a lot of other things that go into church growth or church survival in addition to that. And most evangelism is done by lay people far away from the church, you know, just kind of out on their own or in small groups or whatever. But anyway, I was intrigued with this story because Religion News Service really seemed to think this was new. And this could be one of these things where I have the advantage of just being old and having watched a lot of stuff go by in 40 years covering religion. But I think I covered my first liberal mainline Protestant evangelism without talking about salvation conference back in the early to mid 1980s. I mean, so to some degree, the world of liberal Protestantism has been dealing with its demographics and its lack of growth and trying to come up with a safe alternative form of church growth for a long time. So what we had here was a chance for there to be some honesty in this thing. And I ended up concluding that Religion News Service gave us half the equation in this story. It also didn't really seem to realize that there are different kinds of Lutherans in America and that that offered this story a potential for a kind of freshness or breadth to it if they had only thought to call any other Lutherans up. And maybe you have some idea what are the Lutherans I have in mind.
I do. When you say half the equation, what do you mean there?
Well, they talked about here's this one congregation, and it's going to attempt to make a comeback. It's going to do candid, liberal Bible studies. I won't even attempt to summarize the Adam and Eve rethinking that's in the opening anecdote at the top of the story. They're going to try to be friendly. They're going to try to be very pro-gay and lesbian at the same time, and they're going to really go open with that. They're going to put in a state-of-the-art sound system and do contemporary music as if that's brand new, you know, in the context of Protestantism in America. They're going to do all these things, and they're going to try to grow as a liberal and progressive church. What I found was fascinating is the other half of this, the story was pretty honest about the demographic decline of the ELCA, and it said that this was typical of some other mainline groups. I kept waiting for them to know that there are now other groups of people in America, in addition to liberals, who are beginning to talk openly about declining numbers. Even if those numbers are slowly declining, the Southern Baptist Convention, for example, in the last decade or so, has been very honest about the declining rate of baptisms in its churches, and they begin to realize they have a lot of struggling churches. In my own fold, among the Orthodox, we tend to have churches that are either dying or growing. I mean, there's like no middle ground between the congregations. Either one thing's happening or the other. There was a potential to look at that. And then, of course, what I was hinting at earlier, you had some remarkable work done by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod not that long ago. And I'm sitting here looking at an issue of Journal of Lutheran Mission from December 2016. And in it, the Missouri Synod, which last time I checked, has very few people who could honestly be described as theological liberals. Maybe there are some hiding out in certain parts of the woodwork that I don't know much about. But what we have here is a conservative, doctrinal, mainstream denomination that is beginning to wrestle with why its numbers are declining. So with just a couple of phone calls or a couple of clicks of a mouse, this RNS story could have completed the other half of the equation. See, I mean, wouldn't you be interested in knowing if the ELCA studied church decline and the Missouri Synod studied church decline, just theoretically here, wouldn't you be interested in knowing what showed up in both studies?
Absolutely.
As common denominators? I mean, anytime you've got something happening on the left And it's also happening maybe at a different rate of decline. But you could still say both of these churches are dealing with decline. And they're obviously not going to agree on solutions. Or maybe they would have to agree on a couple of solutions. Maybe they would have to agree that in the context of postmodern America, there are some demographic issues and some geographical issues in different parts of the country. This could have been a story where left and right actually had to kind of listen to each other for a second. And I was glad they did the story, but I thought it was a seriously missed opportunity.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that missed opportunity, in particular with that demographic issue of, well, decisions made 30 years ago to have smaller families. Maybe that's a little bit of what Terry's talking about. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of mainline liberal churches trying to reverse membership decline.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
For 28 years, I had the privilege of serving as a chaplain in the United States Navy.
Dr. Dan Gard, retired Rear Admiral and President of Concordia University Chicago, on the need for military chaplains.
During that time, I was able to bring word and sacrament to so many young people and their families, our sons and daughters spread throughout the world. Truly a privilege and an honor, and today, there are other chaplains that must follow. We need more LCMS chaplains in all branches of the military. It's an incredible, amazing mission opportunities to go to places no other pastor can go, but to go with the same tools that any other pastor brings wherever he goes, word and sacrament.
You can find out more about the vocation of military chaplain at lcms.org/armedforces. The LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. Starting October 1st, this twofold mission becomes even more pronounced. During October, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their ministry of the month, the Concordia Historical Institute. Learn more at lutheranfcu.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the attempts by mainline liberal congregations to reverse membership decline. Terry, before the break, you were talking about a missed journalistic opportunity in the story that from RNS that was dealing with this congregation that's being honestly liberal in an attempt to regrow the church and reverse some of their declines. I think one of those missed opportunities in this story might be simply a demographic issue. It's one of the things that's been discovered by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They've been looking at their decline. It has to do with decisions made 30 or more years ago to have smaller families. It's not something we can reverse in this decade or the next, but it does account for the decline in sheer numbers. Is that the kind of thing you were talking about?
And see, and that demographics related to childbirth, for some reason, let me just read a section, I have it here on my screen, from the Journal of Lutheran Mission. The number of child baptisms and adult converts have decreased together in remarkably similar patterns. Thus, there is no wedge that can be driven between openness to life, family size, and sharing life, evangelism. They are two sides of the same coin. Even down to the congregational level, churches with lots of growing families have lots of adult converts. The two simply go together, and they either increase or decline together, as these data demonstrate. Now, I find that utterly fascinating. And when you look at surrounding American culture, the common denominator seems to me is that talking openly about your faith is way countercultural in the United States right now, unless we're talking about a kind of shopping mall, bookstore, personal growth kind of faith or something like that. And then you look at the issue of family size or an openness to larger families, and that's completely countercultural. Now, you look at the demographics of declining mainline Protestant churches, and you begin to see a slowing or an even cessation of converts other than people who marry into ethnic churches, perhaps, which really doesn't count. You notice a rapidly declining birth rate to even below the national average in the case of religious groups that are really in what some people have called demographic death dives. It's a lovely phrase. And then you also have to admit that these churches, for some reason, begin to have trouble retaining their young people. Now, at the moment, conservative churches are having to face the fact that they're not hanging on to their young people the way they used to. And they're beginning to try to figure out, you know, what's the poison pill here? What's happening in the culture that's influencing our children? And I've heard all kinds of explanations come across the table in two or three decades that I've been looking at this. I've seen things that are like perfectly obvious, and I've seen things that are pretty obscure. Some people think that religious schools are absolutely crucial, that you've got to get your young people to some degree, give them a chance of getting out of the surrounding secular culture. I know some people that think that's absolutely the answer, and I think that works in a lot of cases. It doesn't work in others, and it kind of escapes other issues. I had a long conversation with my own priest in Baltimore one year when I just had a hunch, looking at the young people in our own congregation, which was a growing Eastern Orthodox congregation, but by no means large. This was a church that had helped produce some missions and stuff like that, but it's by no means a thriving megachurch. It's a pretty traditional size Orthodox church that's been producing priests and producing active lay people in a lot of different movements and starting some other missions. And in the midst of that, I asked him a question. It just hit me one day. I said, Father, do you know of any children from our parish who have left Orthodoxy, who were enthusiastic readers? And he thought about it for a long time, and he finally said, I think I can only count on less than one hand, that there seemed to be a direct correlation between whether young people stayed in the faith and whether they were, say, living a life that was larger than the shopping mall and popular culture. Were they reading? Were they reading anything? Not just were they reading classic Christian books, were they reading anything? Or had they essentially kind of been baptized in the world of shopping malls and glowing screens, now as the smartphones hit everybody's pocket? The other thing that didn't come up is there's a fascinating evidence that if you're going to drive people out of the church, young people out of the church, they leave because of reasons related to their sexual behavior and conduct, which I would argue means that pastors are going to have to be more honest and more candid on sexuality issues than they were before. Instead of being scared of them, they're either going to have to talk about why the church's teachings make sense in a modern world and what it means to be genuinely countercultural on that issue, or they're going to have to wed that image, that line of thinking, with another one, which is we live in a culture where lots of people are struggling with sexuality. Lots of people are struggling with pornography. Lots of people are struggling with cohabitation. This is how you come back. In other words, you're going to have to make a really strong case that repentance is a stage of healing. And thus it makes sense to try to come back, as difficult as that is. But being silent and avoiding the issues, that's not going to work. So this was another half of the equation. You had a liberal congregation that was saying, we're going to grow because we're going to be really open about our liberal advocacy on some issues related to sexuality. And we think being candid about this is going to appeal to the religiously unaffiliated young people around us, and they will want to come to our church. Now, that's fascinating. You would immediately have to stop and ask, well, how's that been working for the Episcopal Church for the last 25 years? Or how's that been working in this case or this case or the other? But once again, that's the debate. In the case of the Missouri Synod, you might have to ask, does it need to take it? Look a long look in the mirror and ask if they've been outspoken enough about the actual contents of their teachings on these subjects? Have they been open enough in saying that families are going to have to really face the hostility of the shopping mall libertarian morality culture surrounding them? You know, if we can flash back to, you know, when you and I were together outside of St. Louis, back midsummer, I dared the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church in my presentation at that event to become the first denomination to have an annual event talking about what? What do you recall?
The effect of technology and media on the faith.
On family life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that they needed to once a year have a weekend emphasis on how technology is affecting family life in America. And this is not where everybody's going to go out into the parking lot and burn their cell phones or something like that. I don't even know if that's possible in American life. But at the very least, people should be talking about when young people get smartphones. I'm told by people who study this that the crucial issue is not when you have a phone, it's when you have streaming data. Now, the issue at this point is, does anybody even make regular cell phones anymore? I mean, do we even have the option of children having phones that don't allow them to be one or two finger taps away from pornography, whether accidentally or intentionally? Whatever the reality is here with technology, I think we can both agree that the church going silent on this issue is not going to help families today. Yet silence tends to be the safe, normal American norm. So we had this Lutheran story, and I was fascinated by it. And I really wished, for example, Religion News Service, if anybody there reads Get Religion or whatever, if Religion News Service now did a corresponding story with a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation that's looking really hard at what it's doing and is trying to decide what steps it needs to take on issues related to demographics and declining numbers and an aging congregation and lack of ability to retain young people and just a lack of babies around, Wouldn't it be interesting to, once again, to put those two stories together? So I was sincerely disappointed at this lost opportunity.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of attempts by mainline liberal churches to reverse membership decline. When we come back a little bit more with him, what about how it's working out for the denominations that have tried it? They've been honestly liberal for a long time, like the Episcopal Church USA. The Lutheran Witness magazine interprets the contemporary world from a genuinely Lutheran perspective. You could take advantage of their great offer, 6 digital or print issues for only $6.99. Learn more at cph.org/try Lutheran Witness. cph.org/try Lutheran Witness. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Terry Mattingly. I wonder if you ask, say, Catherine Jeffords Shorey of the Episcopal Church, how being upfront liberal has worked out in terms of decline or growth for her denomination, what would she say?
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back. Terry Mattingly is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about media coverage of attempts for mainline liberal churches to reverse their membership decline. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. Terry, I'm wondering, maybe a good angle to come at this from a journalistic standpoint is to just go ask people who've been trying this for decades and decades. If you went and asked Catherine Jeffords Shorey of the Episcopal Church about how being upfront with their liberalism has worked out for her denomination in terms of either growth or decline, what do you think she'd say?
That question actually got asked to her once, and she gave a perfectly candid answer. She was talked about Episcopal Church decline, and she said, well, of course we have lower birth rates, and of course we don't have as many children in our parishes. Our people are interested in saving the environment, and our people are highly educated. In other words, we're not Mormons, is what I heard her saying. I mean, because this woman used to be the Bishop of Utah. That, you know, but if you knew her personal history, what I heard her saying is, look, you know, we're Episcopalians. We're not Mormons. We don't have large families, and we don't care. And of course, we have smaller families. Of course, we have fewer children. We're highly intelligent, and we're concerned about the environment, which kind of sounded a bit like a cop-out to me. you know, at the same time, I currently attend a church that probably is grown out of the mission stage here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And our church probably has about 125, 130 in average attendance on Sunday morning. And we had a ritual involving girls under the age of 12 as a part of our Holy Week thing. In other words, the myrrh-bearing women who come to the tomb of Jesus. And I think we had 28 girls under the age of 12 in our congregation. My son tried to count everybody under the age of 12 recently at our church and came up with like 48 happened to be there on that particular Sunday morning. That's a lively pack of youngins running around, and it makes trying to hear what's going on in worship interesting at times. But it would appear that countercultural openness to life, whether that's literally the lives of children or whether it's new life, as in making theological claims about salvation, apparently we're in an era when our churches are being really tested on whether or not they're pro-life. And I'm using the term there extremely broadly, you know, in a multiple different ways of thinking about that term. Is your church producing new life? An Anglican bishop told me a story. Now, this was over 20 years ago. So we're back, you know, the battles are really beginning to pick up momentum in the Episcopal Church here in America over sexuality. And they decided during a meeting at Canterbury, they were going to have the bishops from third world countries and Africa and the global South. They were going to be put in Bible studies with representatives of the Frozen Chosen, Europe, England, America, New Zealand, Canada. You know, the churches that were not growing were going to be paired off with the churches that were. And they had all these discussions, and it went round and round and round. And finally, in frustration, and I heard this from someone who was actually in this particular Bible study, from a bishop who was in it, an African bishop finally just looked across the circle at an American bishop and said, "Enough of this already. Who are your converts? Who are you winning to the Christian faith?" And there was this long, long silence, at which point, you know, everybody in the circle basically had to say, one group of these churches had a theology that said they needed to save people from hell, and the other church didn't. That one kind of had a motivation to get out there and to try to tell people what they believe the faith is all about, and the other one didn't. So there's a distinct theological component to this, as well as the demographic components. And that's why I said it was interesting to know if the ELCA and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, if there was anything they might agree on in what kinds of tactics would work toward healthy levels of church growth. And then when they got together, where would they find out they really couldn't agree? Now, what leaps to mind immediately is this church saying that it's a reconciling congregation and wants to be very open to full participation by gays and lesbians who reject centuries of church teachings on sexuality. I think the Missouri Synod isn't going to agree on that, or not many. But so they're not going to agree on some tactics. But at some point, are there things the church could be learning about its surrounding culture? And if I can throw in a Lutheran name, I think H. Richard Niebuhr's Christ in Culture is all of a sudden really relevant in this time when we're all arguing about Rodrer and the Benedict option and whatever. All of a sudden, Niebuhr, looking at the Lutheran dilemmas in Germany in the wake of World War II and the acceptance of Hitler, and trying to decide what it means to be a Lutheran in terms of your stance against your surrounding culture, I really think right now we're on the verge of needing to have a debate among Lutherans about Niebuhrian positions on culture. Is it time to go to Christ against culture? Is it time to bow the knee to the shopping mall and the surrounding cultural trends and say that the Christ of culture is really where it's at? This congregation in North Carolina seemed to be saying Christ of culture is what we need. We need to be more like our surrounding culture. The Holy Spirit is speaking to us through the changes the culture is making, so we should embrace them. That's been a liberal Christian option for a long time. Well, is Christ against culture, just totally rejecting what's going on in the culture? Is that automatically the best solution? Or do we need something more like what Lutherans have been identified with frequently, the Christ in culture in paradox, you know, and admitting that, you know, you've got to have a career, you've got to work in the world, but at the same time you have this calling from the city of God, and we've got to try to figure out how these two things work together. It might be time to have some honest discussions. Put Niebuhr next to Rod Dreher and ask yourself, what is the church going to do right now with this rapidly changing surrounding culture? Can we make peace with it? Are we going to have to oppose it? Are we going to have to accept some things and reject others? Now, you and I are talking here like two church growth consultants. My point as a journalist is to say, in all of those options, there are stories. In all of those options, there are decisions that denominations and local congregations are going to have to make. I don't know if you've looked on Twitter in the last 24 hours or something like that. I'm going to see if I can pull my phone out and come up with the name of this thing quick enough. Or maybe the quickest thing to do would be to run over to Rod Dreher's site, since he wrote about it not that long ago, and I can quietly scroll down and get a handle on it. There's a very interesting website that has opened up now where they there is a liberal group, although they say they're not trying to make churches change their teachings. They're not trying to force policy changes. Ah, here it is. The name of the website is churchclarity.org. And Church Clarity is encouraging people at the local level, and they say they're going to do also research on their own. Their goal is to create a website where every major local congregation in America is going to be asked whether or not it completely affirms LGBTQ rights. And you're going to have the ability to look on this website, and with a few clicks of your mouse, you're going to be able to say, this church believes this. Either go there or flee, do whatever you want, but there is no hiding place now. You're not going to be able to be silent on this. We're going to make you be on the record. What I think is fascinating is this is coming from the left, but Rod Dreher in his piece, which is called The Winnowing of the Churches, Rod openly states this is probably a good thing. This is probably good that our churches are going to be forced to make a decision about how publicly they're going to affirm their own church's teachings on certain types of issues. Will this help grow? Will this help churches force churches to shrink? Liberals and conservatives are probably going to disagree on that. But I think what we can all agree on is that nice, safe, mushy business as usual is now officially dead.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
Terry made several references to Rod Dreher. Rod's going to be making the case for the Benedict option at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. That includes meals Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. Child care is free, thanks to the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education. Do not wait until the last minute to register. Attendance is limited to 400. You can learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618 618- 323-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on the Conservative Reformation, talking with Dr. Larry Rast about baptism. We'll discuss obscure Lutheran reformers. Matthew Block will be our guest. And we'll talk with Steve Aden about ultrasound technology and pro-abortion arguments. It's about time that the liberals who have decided to take that path away from the Word of God were honest about it. The churches grow on account of it. Well, there's no accounting for that. We know that the truth gathers the true church to Jesus Christ. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
In a world awash with all sorts of information, opinions, and ideas, there is still a place where God's Word is the central and only focus. Messiah Lutheran Church, 801 North Madison, Lebanon, Illinois. At 9 o'clock on Sunday mornings, God's people gather there to listen to Him. There you will find His words of law and gospel, and of course, our Lord's Holy Supper. Bible classes focus on the Bible and the Lutheran confessions. Come, listen, believe, and live, and check out our website at messiahlebanon.org.